or toll free at 866-916-5400.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Good Health Live with me, Dr. Winnie King. I'm so glad you've tuned in today. We've got a really, really interesting show lined up for you. I think you're going to find it very interesting. If you have a question, the number to call is 407-916-5400, or you can call me toll free at 866-916-5400. You know, I have a website that you may want to check out sometime. It's drwinnieking.com, and that's just D-R and then Winnie King, W-I-N-N-I-E-K-I-N-G.com. There you can listen to some of the previous shows that we've aired. You can also see some of the TV shows that I am currently involved in. Just a good source of information about Good Health Live. Now, I'm going to give you the clues for today's disease diagnosis a little later in the show. And if you believe that you have the answer, then I want you to give me a call. And if you are correct, you will get a very special gift card that allows you to choose your gift. And then that gift will be drop shipped directly to you. And, you know, at this time of year with the holiday season, you could actually have that gift sent to someone else. So this is a way of maybe solving some last-minute Christmas nightmares, too. You can actually give the gift to someone else if you don't want it. Now, you may have already heard that the FDA has received reports that the pain medication Celebrex has been shown to more than triple a person's risk for having heart attacks and strokes. Well, interestingly, these findings were discovered during a National Cancer Institute study to determine whether Celebrex could be helpful to prevent colon polyps. And, you know, it's out of these polyps that we develop colon cancer. Well, these patients were taking high doses of Celebrex, 400 and 800 milligrams. The findings were so striking with 35 people having a heart attack or stroke that the study was stopped prematurely. Despite this, the FDA chief is not yet ready to yank Celebrex off the market. He wants to further evaluate these findings. In the meantime, though, this has left a lot of people wondering what to take if they've been prescribed Celebrex. In fact, I know many of you had actually switched to Celebrex after Vioxx was taken off the market earlier this year. And my advice to you is to really talk with your doctor about it. If you have risk factors for heart disease or stroke, you really should not be on Celebrex at all. Many of you may be on very low doses of Celebrex, say about 200 milligrams a day. We're not sure if those lower doses are okay for people who have very low risk of heart attack or stroke. Maybe, maybe not. We're not sure. There really haven't been studies to look at that. I know there are a lot of people out there who have no other alternative but to take these, what we call COX-2 inhibitors, because they have GI problems that keep them from taking some of the other anti-inflammatory medications. So talk with your doctor. We have to sort of weigh the risks and the benefits. There's also some concern about the drug Strattera used to treat attention deficit disorder in kids. Sounds like they're going to need to update the label because it sounds like there may be a problem with liver disease in some people. And if you have a child that's on Strattera, you want to talk with your doctor about this. If there's any evidence that there's some kind of liver problem, jaundice, anything like that, definitely talk with your physician about getting off of that. Now, when I come back, I'm going to have a very, very special guest here in the show. We're going to be talking about a very interesting disease. It was discovered back in 1817, and it affects 2 out of every 1,000 people, most after the age of 50. Any ideas? We'll tell you in just a minute.
There's nothing like back pain to bring out different opinions on the golf course.
Looks like you pinched a nerve.
Yep, you pulled a muscle.
But when it comes to treating back pain, golfers agree. Trust the experts at Florida Hospital.
Next time, try a 6-iron.
Hey, next time, go with the 8-iron.
Ask your doctor today about the new Florida Hospital Orthopedic Institute at Winter Park Memorial and call 407-303-7767.
Good Health with Dr. Winnie King, Sundays at 4. Hi, I'm Dr. Winnie King. Symptoms of a stroke are not as clear as you may think. They can include blurred or loss of vision, slurred speech, dizziness, weakness on one side of the body, and or severe headache. At Florida Hospital, the experts are clear on how to help prevent or treat a stroke. Stroke affects more than 700,000 Americans each year and is our nation's third leading cause of death and leading cause of disability. But there is hope through prevention and treatment.
The best chance of survival is to seek immediate treatment by calling 911 and turning to the Florida Hospital Brain Attack Center. As Central Florida's only specialized stroke center, Florida Hospital leads the way in stroke care with a team of experts that respond immediately with proven treatments and advanced therapies. Each year, more stroke patients are treated at Florida Hospital than any other facility in the state. To see if you're at risk for stroke, visit www.floridahospital.com to take a risk assessment. Florida Hospital Brain Attack Center. The experts are clear.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Good Health Live with me, Dr. Winnie King, and we've got a lot to talk about today. If you've got a question, the number to call is 407-916-5400, or call me toll-free at 866-916-5400, and we will get you and your question on the air a little later in the show. I will give you the clues for today's disease diagnosis, and if you think you have the diagnosis out there, doctor, then I want you to call me, and if you're right, we'll send you a very special gift card. Now, the disease I described earlier is Parkinson's disease. It was originally described by Dr. James Parkinson, who published a paper back in 1817 on what he called the shaking palsy. Today, about 50,000 Americans are diagnosed with Parkinson's disease each year, with more than about 500,000 affected at any one time. But getting an accurate count is impossible because many of the early stages of the disease are symptoms that are really, a lot of people think, are just kind of normal signs of aging, and they don't see the doctor for help. Okay, I want to introduce my guest today for the show. We have Dr. Hal Pineless. He's a neurologist here in Central Florida and president of the NeuroCare Institute of Central Florida, which is located in Winter Park. And I'm also joined by Leah Nash. She is with the Florida Hospital Neuroscience Institute, the Parkinson Resource Center, and welcome to you both for being here. We're grateful to have you here on a Sunday to talk about Parkinson's. Okay, well, let's start out by talking about what we're talking about, Parkinson's disease. You know, a lot of people have heard of Parkinson's disease, but I bet you if you were to give a poll, most people wouldn't quite know exactly what it is. Dr. Pineless, what exactly is Parkinson's disease?
Well, Parkinson's disease is really a movement disorder, and I think when a lot of people think of Parkinson's, it seems like a lot of patients who will come in my office will come because they're shaking, and probably that's the biggest fear that they have is that they have Parkinson's disease.
Mm-hmm. Do we know what causes this?
Well, that's a loaded question. I would say that the majority of cases, the answer is no, and we use the term idiopathic, meaning unknown cause for Parkinson's disease. There are certain other things. We know that in this day and age of unfortunate drug abuse among people, that certainly certain chemicals can cause symptoms of Parkinson's disease. Various types of drugs that patients are given mm-hmm. can cause Parkinson's disease. And the good news with that is you can basically reverse the effects. It probably would be incorrect to call that Parkinson's disease. Probably more
kind of a pseudo
effects.
Parkinson's, not quite the real thing.
Or extrapyramidal disorders, mm-hmm. we doctors would call it.
Yeah. But we, at this point, don't really have something that we can really put our finger on and say, this person has Parkinson's because of X.
In certain cases, we do, but I would say the majority of the time, we don't.
No, it seems like we're hearing more about this disease. I don't know, you know, famous people are coming forward and talking about it. Is the incidence of Parkinson's disease going up, or are we just talking about it more?
Well, I think the baby boomers are getting older. Parkinson's disease traditionally is a disease that tends to affect people who are over the age of 60, although it can be as low as the early 20s. I actually have a patient in my practice who was 22 when we diagnosed him with it. So it can span all the different age groups. I think part of the thing is that a lot of the people with as they get older, the population's getting older, and we're starting to notice this a little bit more.
Well, you know, you said 22 years old in one of your patients. I mean, I'm sure most people listening are not thinking of Parkinson's as something that can happen in the 20s. What are some of the early symptoms and then some of the later symptoms that we should be aware of?
Basically, they're very similar. There are four cardinal features that we look for in Parkinson's disease. The first one is the medical term we use, bradykinesia, meaning slowness of movement.
Mm-hmm.
They start slowing down. That could be in the way they get in and out of chairs, their voice. We then have postural instability, where they start losing their balance.
Mm-hmm.
They can fall more easily. They might fall backwards. That's a very common feature. when they turn very slowly. We also have resting tremor, which is different from the more common type postural tremors where people notice those tremors when they're doing things.
Mm-hmm.
In Parkinson's, the tremors usually occur at rest. And then we have what we call truncal rigidity, which is a form of stiffness.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, these are the four features that we commonly are evaluating every time a Parkinson patient comes to the office. And by doing that, we can monitor their therapy and decide if we need to make any adjustments.
Well, let's go to our phone lines. We have our first caller, and it's Kathy on the line. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Dr. Winnie.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Good.
I have two questions.
Good.
About Parkinson's disease.
Mm-hmm.
One, I used to have this friend who had mental problems, and they put her on these medicines for her mental problems. They were serious mental problems, like, I don't know if she was bipolar or schizophrenic or what, but she was really, really paranoid. And they would put her on this medicine, and that would take care of her symptoms,
mm-hmm.
but then she would get all this, like, have a hard time walking, and she would get rigid, and her eyes would roll back in her head.
Oh, yes.
So then they had to give her medicine for that,
mm-hmm.
but that caused a whole bunch of other symptoms.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Dr. Pinelas and I are both nodding at each other. We have a sense of what's going on. Some of the medications that are used to treat some very serious psychological problems, in particular schizophrenia, do have significant side effects. And I suppose, Kathy, what you're asking is... Is that a form of Parkinson's?
Yeah, is it? Because I think she told me, her doctor said she had Parkinsonism.
Yeah. Well, you were kind of alluding to that just a moment ago.
Yeah.
Huh?
Right. Parkinsonism is really what we call the features that I was going through. It's not the true disease. It basically refers to the fact that these are side effects of the drug that they're taking for, in this case, the psychiatric illness.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Parkinson's disease is a certain disease made up of those features.
Uh-huh.
Now, Kathy, you had another question?
Yes, please. I was told by a doctor of nutrition that the reason Michael J. Fox, the actor, got Parkinson's disease was because he used to drink 15 Diet Pepsis a day that were sweetened with NutraSweet.
Uh-huh, that old dangerous NutraSweet.
Yes, and so I'm wondering, does NutraSweet cause Parkinson's disease?
Well, Hal, I'm not aware of that.
Right? I have to confess I'm not aware either, but I think just in general health, and you might be more of an expert at this than I am, but I think anything in excess is probably not a good idea anyway.
Sure. Yeah, I don't think there is anything, certainly there are no studies that would support that way of thinking. I mean, there are some rather sincere health concerns associated with some of the artificial sweeteners. I mean, there are people that claim that they get a multiple sclerosis-like syndrome from taking aspartame. There are people that have complained of severe headache, menstrual abnormalities. Because the concern is, and I'll just digress just for a second, with aspartame or NutraSweet, the concern, and it hasn't been proven, this is just a concern, is that the byproduct of aspartame when it is heated is formaldehyde. And that's not a secret. People know that. And the concern is that if something that contains aspartame becomes hot, then it can break down into formaldehyde. That's the reason why they tell you not to cook with NutraSweet, because of the potential for it breaking down into a formaldehyde-type product. And the concern is that, well, you know, even soft drinks that are sweetened with it could potentially get hot in cars and trucks, you know, as it's being transported across the country. So that's the reason why there's some concern. And I say that, but then I also have to qualify that there have not been any studies that have substantiated that any of the concerns about NutraSweet or aspartame have really resulted in any significant health problems. So it sounds like if we look at Michael J. Fox's case of Parkinsonism, as we look at all the others, that this is a sporadic outbreak occurrence that could happen, you know, just as you heard Dr. Pinelas say he had someone in his 20s with mm-hmm. Parkinson's. You know what I mean? I wouldn't stop ingesting aspartame out of concern that I was going to get Parkinson's, though.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Oh, thank you for calling. Take care of yourself.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. on that vein, Hal, what do we do? I mean, in terms of trying to prevent this. I mean, because if you have someone in your family, you know, if you have an aunt or an uncle or a grandmother, and you watch them go through this disease, it's very, very scary. And you start wondering, is there something that can be done to prevent this from happening?
Unfortunately, at this point, as far as the unknown form of Parkinson's, which is the main part, the answer is no. There's nothing that you can do to prevent it. Now, if we're talking about other things that can cause Parkinsonism, such as if somebody had a stroke, and if the stroke was in the area of the brain where Parkinson's disease originates, which is called the substantia nigra, then certainly people with strokes in that area could conceivably present with features of Parkinson's disease. Those type of situations, obviously you want to do what you can to prevent stroke, and you do that by maintaining blood pressure, making sure your blood pressure is fine, your sugars are under control, your lipids, your cholesterol is fine, and by going on your annual visits to the doctor, that'll help quite a bit.
Do we know if this is inherited, though? Is there a gene that has the Parkinson's gene on it?
Well, actually, they're working out the, as you know, the human genome was just uncovered and fully mapped out a few years ago, and they're in the process of working that out right now. What we can say is that there's probably, in patients who have family members with Parkinson's, there might be a 1 to 2% higher than normal chance that other family members would get it, but it certainly would be wrong for family members to think that because somebody in their family has Parkinson's, that they're going to get it as well.
Yeah, well, I think, and that leads to my next question, and that is, if you have someone who is in your family with Parkinson's, does that mean that you're more likely to get it? I mean, can you look at a person's family history and tell them you have a higher chance of getting Parkinson's?
Well, for the most part, at this point, no. Except, as I say, that 1 to 2%. Now, they have localized two genes recently, the alpha-synuclein gene and the Parkin gene. And the Parkin gene, they have found, is the one that causes Parkinson's in people in their 20s, 30s. The alpha-synuclein is more like 40s, 50s. We don't think that those genes have anything to do with people over the age of 65. And this is very preliminary data right now.
Well, suppose you think you may have this, you know, you go to the doctor, what kind of test? Can they do a blood test? Can they do an x-ray? I mean, how do they make the diagnosis?
Well, the good news is it can be done at the bedside or in the exam room. Most neurologists certainly are very competent and capable to diagnose this condition. Sometimes we need to do some other things such as MRI or CT scans of the brain to make sure that there is no tumor, stroke, other abnormality in the brain that could cause, if it's placed in the right area, again, the substantia nigra could cause Parkinson's symptoms. But for the most part, most of the time, the diagnosis is made just looking at the person and examining them.
Now, you'd mentioned earlier before we started the show that you have a great imitation of Muhammad Ali before and after his Parkinson's.
Well, I don't know if it's great.
You're the greatest.
I'm going to let the audience judge. But it illustrates one of the things which I was talking about before, and that was the idea of some of the features of the Parkinson's. For example, we all remember Muhammad Ali when he used to say, "I'm pretty, nobody ever going to whoop me, three-time heavyweight champion, flow like a butterfly, sting like a bee, nobody can touch Muhammad Ali, because I'm pretty, I'm the greatest." Now,
that's pretty good.
Now we have, "Was everybody trying to tell me I could whoop Mike Tyson? Mike Tyson wouldn't come near me, couldn't bite me." Now, here's the point I'm trying to make.
That's
you
right.
Notice how the voice got softer.
Yeah.
And this is something, when you see Parkinson patients, a lot of times they have a soft, monotone voice.
Mm-hmm.
And if you notice that, and I've been a big Muhammad Ali fan, I can tell you, that's one of the things. You barely can understand him sometimes. They also have an expression on their face we call mask faces, or the reptilian stare, where you wouldn't want to play poker with a patient with Parkinson's.
You'd lose.
Right. And their movements are slower. We certainly know that one of the things Muhammad Ali was known for was how fast he was in the ring, dancing around, and he would hit you before you even knew anything happened. And now, he's pretty slow.
Now, in his case, though, is his Parkinson's related to his head trauma from all those years of boxing?
Well, that was the thinking years ago. I have talked actually to some people who are somewhat familiar with them, and I think at this point they're thinking this is idiopathic Parkinson's, but I'm not his doctor, so I really can't
really?
Say.
Really? That's yeah. interesting, because I think a lot of people have just sort of assumed that, you know, all those blows to the head
have
to damage something.
It didn't help.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, you'd mentioned that the neurologist at the bedside can make the diagnosis. Should all patients with Parkinson's be evaluated and treated by a neurologist?
Well, I think a lot depends on the skill of their family doctor. I certainly think the first step is to go see the family physician. A lot of family physicians are very good and are very capable of diagnosing this problem.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times they will want to send the patient to a neurologist for a second opinion
sure.
to confirm. And a lot of times it is the neurologist who will initiate treatment, although sometimes the family doctor will do that as well.
Okay, fair enough. Well, we're going to come back in just a moment, and we're going to talk about some of the resources that are available to help people with Parkinson's, not only the patient, but also the family, because this is a very, very tough problem, and we've got some answers and some solutions for you. If you've got a question, give me a call. The number is 407-916-5400 or toll-free at 866-916-5400, and when I come back, I'll give you the clues for today's disease diagnosis.
When a child takes a fall, suddenly everyone's a doctor.
A classic case of treehouse elbow.
We may have to operate.
Oh, I think I brained it.
But when it comes to mending broken bones, everyone agrees. Florida Hospital. And you'll be glad to know there's a Florida Hospital Emergency Department or Center Care Walk-In Center right around the corner.
I'll drive the ambulance.
Ask your doctor today about the new Florida Hospital Orthopedic Institute at Winter Park Memorial and call 407-303-7767.
Good health with Dr. Winnie King, Sundays at 4.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Good Health Live with me, Dr. Winnie King, and we are talking about Parkinson's disease today. And if you have a question, the number to call is 407-916-5400 or call toll-free at 866-916-5400. Now, before we get back to our discussion of the day, I want to give you the clues for today's disease diagnosis. And if you believe that you know the correct diagnosis, then I want you to call me. And if you're right, I'll send you a gift card. Now, here are the rules, because we've had to change the rules a little bit. You only get one guess, okay? You can't just keep running through all of the different ideas that you have, your differential diagnosis list. Call me with one guess, and if you're right, it's yours. Okay, today's disease is more commonly seen in children between 3 months and 16 years. So that's really all of childhood. It's equally common in boys and girls. A child with this problem will have a fever, sore throat, they'll be irritable, vomit, have headache, and drooling. Okay, the really important clue in all of this is drooling. These kids are absolutely miserable. Now, when you look in the throat, the tonsils appear completely normal, okay? No big red beefy tonsils. All right, if you have a diagnosis, if you think you know what it is, call me, 407-916-5400, toll-free at 866-916-5400. Okay, back to Parkinson's disease. I'm joined today by Dr. Hal Pinus. He's a neurologist, and he is also the president of the NeuroCare Institute of Central Florida, located in Winter Park. The phone number, by the way, if you'd like to reach Dr. Pinus, is 407-657-7900. Again, that's 407-657-7900. He also has a website, and that's neurocareinstitute.com. I'm also joined by Leah Nash. She's with Florida Hospital Neuroscience Institute Parkinson Resource Center. Boy, that's a mouthful. And Leah, I want to talk with you a bit about what kind of services are available. We've just heard in the first part of the show about how devastating this disease can be for people, just overwhelming in terms of their loss of sense of self, and there are some services available. Tell us about what you guys do.
Definitely. We at the Parkinson's Resource Center at the Florida Hospital Neuroscience Institute, we felt there was a need, there was an unmet need in the community. So there are several services available for free to Parkinson's disease patients as well as care partners. These include, we have support groups both in Orange County and Seminole County. We have specific exercise classes for Parkinson's Parkinson's disease patients, educational programs. I know Dr. Penless spoke at a symposium that we had last year, and that's going to be an annual event.
Mm-hmm.
We also provide referrals and resources and information on local Florida Hospital Neuroscience Institute physicians. And we have a resource center where there's educational material for Parkinson's disease patients and care partners that they can look at and review.
And you're the only funded organization
yes.
in Central Florida?
The Parkinson Resource Center at the Florida Hospital Neuroscience Institute is funded by a grant with the National Parkinson's Foundation, and we're the only local outreach center in this area.
Okay. Now, give me a phone number, because I know there's going to be folks listening that would like to get in touch. How would they reach you?
Mm-hmm. You can call 407-767-7862, and you can also visit our website, www.floridahospital.com, and you should see a link on the main page right to the Parkinson Resource Center information.
Okay, and again, give that phone number out one more time.
Sure, 407-767-7862.
Okay, all right. Let's go to our phone lines. We have, I believe, a disease diagnosis on the line. Hi, John.
Yes, is it epiglottitis?
Oh, you know what? That is not the correct answer, but I must tell you that is an excellent choice. An excellent choice. There was a time when we used to see epiglottitis quite a bit in the United States, but the infection is caused. It involves the epiglottis, which is a structure in the base of the throat, and it is caused by a bacteria called H. influenza. But these days, children are getting vaccinated for that. It's part of their preschool immunization protocol, and so they no longer are really at risk for getting epiglottitis. But, John, that was really an excellent question. And about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you would have been absolutely right. But and I know what you were thinking with the drooling, because that is something that we do see with the epiglottitis is the drooling. But just think of kids with a sore throat, normal-looking throat. They're irritable. I'll give you something else that maybe this will help you also. When you look in the back of the throat, you may see little bumps back there, little fluid-filled blisters in the back of the throat. That may be another little clue that will help you come up with a correct diagnosis. And if you believe you've got it, I do want you to call me, 407-916-5400. Call me toll-free at 866-916-5400. By the way, this segment is being brought to you by Florida Hospital with 16 locations throughout the state. Florida Hospital has the skill to heal and the spirit to care. Okay, let's go back to our special guest. We have Dr. Hal Pineless, who is a neurologist here and treats many people with Parkinson's. Does Parkinson's disease affect a person's intellect? Does it make their IQ change?
That's a tough question. For the most part, I would say no. Having said that, we know that there is a higher incidence of dementia as people certainly get older. And there, not to confuse everybody, but there is a Parkinson's dementia. And then there is, of course, people can have Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Certainly, we know that as the range as far as dementia or memory impairment is concerned is anywhere from 5 to 85% of Parkinson patients will develop memory problems at some time. But a lot of times it could be because of the medications much as the disease itself. So it's very hard to say. I've been impressed over the years that most of my Parkinson patients, I would say the great majority, still keep their intellect pretty well in check.
Now, what about the psychological changes, though? I mean, I understand there's a fair bit of depression with this disease.
Correct. There is depression. Again, part of that might be medication-induced. But, yes, I think a lot of times people, especially in the beginning, have a very hard time accepting the diagnosis. I have a patient who was in his 50s when we diagnosed him, and it took him a number of months before he finally felt comfortable accepting the diagnosis. But once he saw how the medicines were working and were helping him, mm-hmm. He was able to handle it quite well, and now he's doing quite well.
Okay, let's go back to our phone lines. We have Ruth on the line with a diagnosis for me. Hi, Ruth.
Hi.
How you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Good. Go right ahead. What's your diagnosis?
A strep throat.
Say again.
Strep throat.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ruth. Oh, you're so close, but no, it is not a strep throat. As a matter of fact,
thank you, Dr.
Oh,
Kate.
You're quite welcome. Keep bye listening, bye. Though. You may come up with it. A couple of weeks ago, we gave clues, and the diagnosis was strep throat. And that's the reason why I'm doing today's disease, because it isn't strep throat. It's very similar in the way it presents, but it actually is different. But put your thinking caps on out there. Just think about it. Fever, blisters in the back of the throat, drooling, a lot of pain, fever, vomiting. Okay, let's get back to Parkinson's. There's a few other things that we really need to cover. With Parkinson's disease, there is a problem with a neurotransmitter called dopamine, which is something that is made in a part of the brain. And it would seem that because there is a decrease in it, that if you just replace it, I mean, this is easy, right? You know, boy, everybody should be a doctor. You just take dopamine pills. Is it that simple? How do we treat Parkinson's disease?
Well, we wish it was that simple. The reality is that most patients, when they are diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, have 80% of the dopamine in their brain depleted already. Mm-hmm. So the name of the game is how do we prevent this from happening? Over the years, what we've been able to do is treat the symptoms, and that's what we do with our current therapy. On the horizon, we're looking into neuroprotection and neurorestoration of the dopamine cells. This is a very hot area of research that is going on right now.
And we're actually going to stop you right there, because that's what I want to talk about when we come back, is what's on the horizon. Because I know there are some things that researchers and scientists are very, very excited about. And when we come back, we're going to talk about that in more detail. And also call me if you think you have that diagnosis. I want to give you that gift. Be back in a minute.
If a member of the Orlando Magic has an injury, everyone has an opinion.
Whoa, I'd put some ice on that.
Nah, you better get some heat on that, bro.
But when it comes to treating sports-related injuries, the pros agree. Florida Hospital, the official choice of the Orlando Magic, Miracle, the Florida Citrus Bowl, and Disney's Wide World of Sports.
What's like tendonitis?
Nah, torn ligament.
Ask your doctor today about the new Florida Hospital Orthopedic Institute at Winter Park Memorial and call 407-303-SPORT.
Good health with Dr. Winnie King, Sundays at 4. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to Good Health Live with me, Dr. Winnie King, and we're talking about Parkinson's disease today. I'm joined by Dr. Hal Pineless, who is a neurologist, president of the NeuroCare Institute of Central Florida. His office number is 407-657-7900. He also has a website, and that's neurocareinstitute.com. And I'm also joined by Leah Nash from Florida Hospital, the Neuroscience Institute Parkinson Resource Center. And she was just telling us a bit about the services that are available. But, Leah, I think it's important for people to know that there isn't a charge for this.
Right. The services there are free. And we also have support groups for care partners and caregivers of patients with Parkinson's disease. So that's available as well.
Okay, good, good. I don't want people to not call because they are worried there may be a cost. And give that phone number out again.
Of course, it's 407-767-7862. And we're also at www.floridahospital.com.
Okay, good. Dr. Pineless, you were just starting to talk about new treatments, which is something that I'm sure people who have Parkinson's, people who have loved ones with Parkinson's care quite a bit about. What's new? What do we have to look forward to in treatment?
Well, right now, surgery is becoming more prevalent, and I'm sure some people have heard about the deep brain stimulators made by Medtronic. And basically what this is it's kind of like a brain pacemaker, if you will. You implant a pacemaker-like device underneath the collarbone, and they tunnel up these wires through the neck up into the scalp. And then a neurosurgeon actually places them in specific areas of the brain that can help to treat a lot of the Parkinson's symptoms, such as tremor.
Right.
They will use it also to treat, to help with the movements, to improve their movements, cut down on a lot of the side effects that people are having sometimes from some of the drugs that they're taking. A lot of times people become refractory. In other words, they can't handle these drugs anymore. Either the side effects are too bad for them, or the medication isn't as effective as it used to be.
Okay, all right. Do you think that we can look at this as maybe a possible cure for Parkinson's, or is it really just more trying to control the symptoms?
Well, Vinny, I think right now is a very exciting time in Parkinson's disease research. A lot of things are happening. It doesn't hurt that we have, unfortunately, some famous people like Michael J. Fox, Muhammad Ali, who have it. It helps bring more money into research. What I can tell you is I was just reading in a journal not too long ago that some people are saying that maybe in 10 years we're going to have a cure, which I thought was first time I ever read something like that. Boy, that's pretty encouraging. That just shows you what's happening in the research of this disease. And certainly, as long as the research is going, I think we're going to find that people are going to get better.
Yeah. What would you say right now is the general overall prognosis for patients with Parkinson's? I mean, is once they are diagnosed, is that typically the thing that will cause them to eventually die, or are people able to just live full and enjoyable lives with medication?
Thankfully, the latter. They're able to basically live a normal lifespan, and certainly the older a person is, the better the chances are. But I think usually if people are going to expire, it's going to be due to a complication such as pneumonia or some infection, urinary tract infection, or an infection that gets into their bloodstream. It's not going to be necessarily the Parkinson's disease itself, such as whereas a disease like Lou Gehrig's disease or ALS would certainly cause death. With Parkinson's disease, it's different. It's usually other infections.
What should family members do? You know, you can feel kind of helpless as you watch your loved one sort of kind of just suffer and go down, so to speak. What is the, and in your experience, the thing that helps these people the most?
I think the most important thing is that the patient feels that the family is there for them, and that they have the support and the love of the family. That's something that I think people in general want and need.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's always helpful to me when a Parkinson patient comes to my office and there's a family member with them. We encourage that. We like that because they're going to get better care that way. And that kind of goes back to something that Leah was talking about with, you know, Florida Hospital with their support groups. Support groups, I think, are very important. Sometimes families just need an outlet. They need to be able to talk to somebody and talk to other people and see that they're not in this alone.
Yeah. There was,
I was just about to say, you know, the support groups, they really are supportive of each other, the patients and the care partners. I just attended their holiday party, and, I mean, there was just so much caring in the room and support of each other. It was really an amazing thing. So I think that they are helpful to both the patients and the care partners.
It's very tempting when you have a very serious illness to shut down, to close off, to not reach out to other people, to feel as if it's a private matter. And that's the time when you really need support the most. And so that's why I wanted folks to know that there is support, and that support does help, and it's a really important thing to take advantage of. We've just got a few moments left. Hal, I did want to ask you about the topic that was a point of contention in our recent political process, presidential campaign, and that's stem cells. You know, there's been a lot of push for the opportunity for funding for stem cells. We're not really quite sure if that's going to mean much in terms of whether or not it's going to change anything. But what about stem cells in the treatment of Parkinson's?
Well, it's certainly a very hot topic right now. There is research being done. It's being done probably mostly out of the United States, but there is some being done here. My understanding is that as long as it's not using public funds, you can do the research. So research is being done, and it certainly looks very promising, but I think it's way too soon right now to conclude that this is going to be the cure for Parkinson's disease. But I think we're heading in the right direction looking in that way.
Doesn't hurt to look, I suppose.
No, not at all.
What about the tremors? I mean, this is something that makes people aware, at least initially, that there's something going on, is the tremor. Is there anything that you can do? Is there surgery for that, or are there pills that make you stop shaking?
Well, certainly medications, yes. There are medicines. Traditionally, years ago, we used a drug called Artane or Triphenhexadil. Amantadine is sometimes used. More commonly now, drugs such as Sinemet, Sinemet CR, Requip, Mirapex, just to name a few, are used to treat tremor as well as other Parkinson features. The good news is that for some people who can't tolerate the medications, there is now the deep brain stimulator, and that is excellent for treating the tremor. I can tell you at the NeuroCare Institute, we are involved with programming these patients after they've had surgery. And it always amazes me, and it's very humbling, to be honest with you, to see a person coming in shaking and walking out, and the shaking is just about gone or completely gone.
Wow, that is amazing.
It really is. It's very humbling.
Yeah. Well, and certainly something to be somewhat optimistic about in the treatment, because the tremors are, I think, what really people find so frustrating, especially initially. Okay, well, we've just got a moment left, and I'm going to go ahead and give you the answer for today's disease diagnosis. It is herpangina, and I know many of you may not have known that expression, but if you'd given me viral pharyngitis, I would have taken that as well. It's caused by an infection with Coxsackie virus, A or B, and many of you parents out there have heard of Coxsackie virus because it is notorious to cause infection in children. You may recall that a couple of weeks ago I gave you a disease diagnosis presentation, and it was on strep throat caused by a bacteria. In that case, the treatment is an antibiotic. Well, today's disease is caused by a virus, but gives patients very similar symptoms. It causes a sore throat, a headache, fever, irritability, just like strep. Now, in small kids, the pain in their throat will make swallowing unbearable, so they will often drool. I recently saw a lot of children in my office with this last month, and it's so frustrating for parents because when the diagnosis is made, the treatment is really just pain medication. When the doctor looks into the throat, she will see fluid-filled blisters or open blisters that look like ulcers in the back of the throat. This cinches the diagnosis. If the strep test is also negative, then you know for sure, and antibiotics are the wrong treatment. Now, I chose this particular disease to show you that not all sore throats respond to antibiotics. Viral infections can hurt just as much as strep throat. Take pain medication like ibuprofen or acetaminophen. Your doctor may also prescribe a mouthwash with some Benadryl or lidocaine to help the symptoms. Be back in just a moment. Hi, I'm Dr. Winnie King. Symptoms of a stroke are not as clear as you may think. They can include blurred or loss of vision, slurred speech, dizziness, weakness on one side of the body, and or severe headache. At Florida Hospital, the experts are clear on how to help prevent or treat a stroke. Stroke affects more than 700,000 Americans each year and is our nation's third leading cause of death and leading cause of disability. But there is hope through prevention and treatment. The best chance of survival is to seek immediate treatment by calling 911 and turning to the Florida Hospital Brain Attack Center. As Central Florida's only specialized stroke center, Florida Hospital leads the way in stroke care with a team of experts that respond immediately with proven treatments and advanced therapies. Each year, more stroke patients are treated at Florida Hospital than any other facility in the state. To see if you're at risk for stroke, visit www.floridahospital.com to take a risk assessment. Florida Hospital Brain Attack Center. The experts are clear. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I want to thank my special guest for being here today and talking about Parkinson's disease, something that most people know someone who knows someone. You know, it's one of those diseases that it's not a secret anymore, and we're talking more and more about it, and I appreciate them being here. Dr. Hal Pineless, neurologist and also president of the NeuroCare Institute of Central Florida. His phone number, again, is 407-657-7900. And the website is neurocareinstitute.com. And also Leah Nash. She's with the Florida Hospital Neuroscience Institute, the Parkinson Resource Center. And she was here also sharing with us the wonderful services that are available there as well. And that phone number is 407-767-7862. And they also have a website, and that's floridahospital.com. And there is a link on that front page to the Parkinson Resource Center, where you can access more information. Thank you both so much for being here on the show. I so appreciate that. I've got some interesting news for those of you out there who are married. You know, there's research now that confirms what many of us already know. It's a government study that's found that it's healthy to be married. The only negative effect is some extra weight gain among husbands, but, you know, that's not so bad. They found that married couples are sick less often. They're more active than single people. They tend to engage in less risky behaviors. They tend to smoke less, drink less, And they generally report feeling better than people who are single, divorced, never married, or living with someone. So if you are married, thank your spouse. Thank your spouse, because he or she might be contributing to the extension of your life. So it's a good thing to be married. Now, we all know that at this time of year, we tend to eat more and gain more weight. That's just a fact of life. But there are some things that you can do to minimize the weight gain. When you eat your meals, leave room for dessert while you're eating your main dish, okay? The desserts this time of year are so tempting, so you probably want some. But just make a deal with yourself and skip something that's fattening in the meal so that you can have the dessert. And another thing to do is to drink diet soda instead of regular soda. Maybe one alcoholic beverage instead of two. And also this time of year, I know a lot of people feel a little bit more depressed. It's hard, you know, with all of the pressure that we feel to buy gifts, spend time with family, and just be happy. Sometimes we don't feel so happy. But you know what? That's okay. Try to focus on what the holiday season is really all about. This is far more important than the hype of buying things we don't need and eating more food than we should. Don't buy into the guilt trip. If you don't have someone to buy you diamonds, don't have a boatload of friends to hang out with, it's okay. I think you're wonderful and special. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. I'll be back next week with a brand new show. Happy holidays.